Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, along with our outstanding Mr. Zommers, our producer and engineer. It is Wednesday, May 15th, 2024. A great day to be Wisconsinite and
Hump Day.
The Geico Camel feeling his summer oats. It feels like summer. Look at the, oh my gosh, look at the bikes going up State Street right now. It's like a bike race right now going on here in look at that. Look, Mr. Zommers got it there for those watching on the stream. Look at that. It's literally a bike race.
That's a lot of bikes.
It's like, those are like touring bikes.
It's like 100 bikes.
Right.
They have like, or at least like 50, maybe not 100. I didn't see the whole thing, but it's probably at least like 40. 50 bikes.
They have like the racing leotards and the helmets and the numbers. I didn't know there was a bike race going on. That's what I'm saying. We're getting into the summer season here high atop State Street, a block off the Capitol Square. As you can see, those watching on the stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, a beautiful day here in South Central Wisconsin in the state's capital, and hopefully a beautiful day where you are as well. Big show or big hour coming up here at the bottom of the hour. Been a while since we heard from him. Keegan Kelly from Cracked.com, one of the great writers there at Cracked, has a new piece debuting here on this show. And he asks the question, have comedy podcasts, have they made late night shows obsolete?
I'm looking forward to this. I always appreciate the really journalistic attitude that he takes towards it. Like the great writers at Cracked are very dedicated to their craft, and it shows in very different ways for each one, and I appreciate them all.
Yeah, and I'm a late night guy, somebody who grew up with Johnny Carson and then David Letterman and on from there, and someone who appreciates late night and kind of obsessed a little bit by it. Had our own late night show in college for a couple of years on localized television down in Southwest Wisconsin. And so I'll be very interested because I still do watch Colbert and Kimmel, usually one or the other most nights of the week. But I understand that, you know, in my 50s now, maybe I'm not quite as in touch with people, younger people who are doing comedy podcasts. So we'll see. We'll ask Keegan about that, but that's coming up after the news at 1:30. Want to just touch on again and kind of finish up this story we started with Trigvy, because it's kind of a big story. It's gotten national attention. I'm using the article from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It says, what to know about Doug Gottlieb, national radio host and new UWGB men's basketball coach. So Doug Gottlieb, better known as a national radio personality and sports analyst, is now the head coach of the men's basketball team at the University of Wisconsin Green Bay. In his first NCAA head coaching job, perhaps even more interesting, doesn't necessarily mean the end of his national radio show. So my friends will tell you, I am a person that works in media who is consumed by media. I love it. I love reading about it. I love studying it. I love the craft of it. I love the history of it. And I'm always intrigued when something new and interesting is happening in media.
Yeah, that's how I am with video games and movies specifically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's fun for me to see this. And also as a person who enjoys college sports, particularly college basketball. And I'm going to tell you why here in just a minute. But first of all, a couple of things. According to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Doug Gottlieb, I did not know this. Speaking of a Johnny Carson line, I did not know that. Doug Gottlieb was born in Milwaukee, the son of UW Milwaukee basketball coach Bob Gottlieb. Gottlieb was born in Milwaukee in 1976, son of former UWM head coach Bob Gottlieb. Bob remained head coach through the 79-80 season and then became an assistant at Long Beach State and Oregon State. The older Gottlieb died in 2014. Doug Gottlieb, the new head coach at Green Bay, went to school in Tustin, California. How about that? And interestingly enough, Gottlieb does not have any coaching experience in the NCAA, although he does have a coaching gold medal. Gottlieb was interviewed for openings at his alma mater, Oklahoma State, and interviewed for the UWGB job last year when it was offered to Sundance Wicks, but doesn't have any NCAA head coaching experience. He was, however, Gottlieb, the head coach of Team USA in one of the international games leading up to the 2017 team, leading the 2017 team to a gold medal, and had previously been on the staff of the USA team under former UW-Milwaukee head coach Bruce Pearl. Remember him? He was kind of a piece of work. He came after Bo Ryan built up the program at Milwaukee before he took the Wisconsin-Madison job. And then Bruce Pearl kind of came in there and rode on Bo's coattails, got himself into some trouble down in Tennessee after he left Milwaukee, and then now he's gone on to lead Alabama. Auburn. Back to the story here. The games are held every 4 years, I should say, of these international events, of which Gottlieb's team won a gold medal in 2017. He's not without controversy, but you have to go back quite a ways. So in college, he originally started his college career at Notre Dame, and he admitted to using stolen credit cards in college. Says he made a bad decision. He pled guilty to a Class C misdemeanor and was asked to transfer out of the program. He landed at Golden West College and then got a second chance at Oklahoma State, where he was a regular starter for 3 seasons. Has a long history, Oklahoma State. Beloved Oklahoma State. And then went on to start this radio show, originally on ESPN, and then went to CBS Radio, and now is a part of the Fox Radio team. You've probably seen him up through this year. He was also doing television on Turner and CBS Sports as an analyst for college basketball. And again, it was down to Gottlieb and also the guy that eventually got hired. By the way, he left after 1 season, Sundance did, and went out to Wyoming, his alma mater. So that's why he left after 1 year. He built up the Phoenix up in Green Bay last year into a winning program after being a very losing program the year before. Actually, under former Wisconsin head coach Bo Ryan's son, Will Ryan. Great guy. Just didn't work out for him at Green Bay. So Sundance built up the program, but then said, hey, I get to go up to my alma mater in Wyoming, and I guess who could blame him? And he's off. So now you got Gottlieb hired as the head coach at Green Bay men's basketball program. But reports are, he confirmed yesterday, he's going to keep doing his radio show every afternoon for Fox Sports Radio through iHeart, syndicated across the country. I believe it's from 2 until 4 is when this show plays or when he does it. It seems to me if you're going to be, and remember, Green Bay is a D1 program. It's in the Horizon League, same as Milwaukee. So you're a D1 program and your head coach is doing a 2-hour radio show every afternoon. I would think that'd be a little distracting, but here's the rub. And here's why I think it's going to be a great experiment. And I do give the chancellor at Green Bay credit, the athletic director, for taking a roll of the dice on this. And here's why. With NIL, name, image, and likeness, and the competitiveness now for these players, and it's all about money, right? All about money. How much are they going to get paid with NIL? We said yesterday, there's this kid playing for, I believe, the University of Washington, $2 million a year. $2 million. For one kid to play D1 basketball in the state of Washington. The Sundance Wicks, the guy who was the head coach, just left, was getting $300,000 a year to be the head coach at Green Bay. 7 times more than this kid played at Washington. Now, Washington's a bigger program. They're now in the Big Ten, along with Wisconsin and others. But I mean, holy smokes. How do you compete if you're Green Bay in a D1 program? Well, maybe this is kind of out of the same playbook as Deion Sanders, Prime, Coach Prime, going, out to Colorado, getting all this national attention. maybe this, maybe, just maybe, this is the way for mid-major schools, D1 programs that are not higher level like Wisconsin. Maybe this is a way to compete, because Green Bay can't raise the same money in NIL that Wisconsin or Iowa or Ohio State can. But with hiring Doug Gottlieb, a national sports figure, maybe there'll be kids be like, hey, this is cool, because I get to go on the radio with my head coach and talk to a national audience every day. Maybe this is a way for Green Bay to get a national audience, to get NIL sponsorships. It's very intriguing to me. What do you think about this? 855-752-4842. 855-752-4842. Make it easy for you. 855-75-CIVIC. Tony, watching on YouTube, says, that can't raise Ohio State money with that attitude, Todd. Well, I'm just saying. My guess is that Ohio State or Wisconsin-Madison has a larger donor base than UWGB. Except, you know, Schneider Trucking is based out of Green Bay. Maybe if the owners of Schneider Trucking say we're going to put in $10 million into the you know, the NIL fund at Green Bay, maybe.
That would be something.
Yeah. But look, hitherto unknown fact, as my former teacher Ken Lewis is fond of saying, hitherto unknown fact. You want to know the reason that Green Bay, you know what allowed UW Green Bay to go Division I? Because they were Division II. They wanted to hire Dick Bennett from Stevens Point, and Bennett wanted to be a Division I program. But they were one program short from going to Division I. They had to add another program, another sports athletic program. So they added wrestling. You know who the first and only head wrestling coach at the University of Wisconsin Green Bay was? James Robert Albaugh, my dad.
I did know that, but
I know you did know that. And so they added wrestling, and they kept it just long enough to get through like whatever calendar they had to have it, and then they cut it right away.
So Todd, you're a radio host, yes. And your dad was a wrestling coach, mm-hmm. So you could keep your show and coach wrestling.
You've got something. You see, this is exactly where it was leading. So does this qualify me now to be a head coach, being a radio talk show host?
I think so.
855-752-4842. 855-752-4842. Apparently, I can't read right now. Come back with more after this. It's the All Ball Show for a Wednesday on the Civic Media Radio Network. Wherever it may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 20 past the hour of 1 o'clock. Mr. Zommer's on the board. Coming up here after the break at the bottom of the hour, Keegan Kelly from Cracked.com will be along and premiering his new article right here on our show first. An article that asks the question, have comedy podcasts, has that model meant that late night shows are obsolete? It's interesting. I mean, we're looking, and Keegan is nothing but a historian of late night television in general. And I think it's pertinent because we see national TV viewership going down, of course, across broadcast and cable, right? I mean, in its heyday, you know, the Carson show, the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, you know, millions, you know, 20 million people would tune in across the country every night. I think that Colbert is still on top in broadcast late night with like 2.5 or 3 million now, which is a big number for broadcast television in late night right now. So things have changed a lot with streaming and everything else. And so now a lot of people are listening to podcasts, comedy podcasts, and a lot of these late-night shows are doing bits where they can package them in podcast form. So we'll ask Keegan Kelly. He'll be along after the bottom of the hour. By the way, this last story with Doug Gottlieb, Fox radio host, sports host, now being the head coach of University of Wisconsin Green Bay. Yes, I'm available any athletic program that wants to hire me. I'm going to keep my job just like Gottlieb on the radio. But maybe I'm the next Ted Lasso, Mr. Sommers, because I was the manager for the UW Richland soccer team.
Well, there you go. Now you have your previous experience.
And we won a conference championship at UW Center Richland during my time in college, and I was the manager.
So you have a successful record.
I have a successful record. I think I can do as well as Gottlieb is going to do in basketball.
A short record.
Yeah. So I'm available. If you're looking for a soccer coach, let us know. And I'll keep the radio program, but I'll be happy to help out with the soccer team as well. 22 past the hour of 1 o'clock now. Want to get to this story with the Associated Press, and we're not going to spend a lot of time on it, but I think it's an important story to at least mention and bring up here. This from the Associated Press. The Kansas City Chiefs kicker, Harrison Butker, says a woman should be, quote, a homemaker, unquote, in a college commencement speech. Dateline Kansas City, Missouri. Kansas City kicker Harrison Butker railed against Pride Month, working women, President Biden's leadership during the COVID-19 pandemic, and abortion during a commencement address at Benedictine College last weekend. Important to note, Benedictine College is a private religious college, but still, the three-time Super Bowl champion delivered the roughly 20-minute address Saturday at the Catholic Private Liberal Arts School in Atkinson, Kansas, which is located about 60 miles north of Kansas City. Butker, who has made his conservative Catholic beliefs well known, began his address by attacking what he called, quote, dangerous gender ideologies, unquote, in an apparent reference to Pride Month, which has been celebrated in June since the Stonewall Riots of 1969. The 28-year-old Butker then took aim at President Biden's policy, including his response to COVID-19. He said, quote, while COVID might have played a large role throughout your formative years, it is not unique. The bad policies and poor leadership have negatively impacted major life issues, things like abortion, IVF, surrogacy, euthanasia, and it goes on from there. I'm not going to read the whole thing. But it got worse. Butker later addressed women in the audience, college graduating women, arguing that, quote, their most important title should be that of homemaker. He went on to say, I think it's you, the women, who have had the most diabolic lies told to you. Some of you may go on to lead successful careers in the world, but I would venture to guess the majority of you are most excited about your marriage and the children you'll bring into this world. I can tell you that my beautiful wife, Isabel, will be the first to say her life truly started when she started living her vocation as a wife and mother, unquote. The Chiefs declined to comment on Butler's commencement address. Now, look, I want to be clear. I think that being a mother is one of the hardest and also most wonderful jobs in the world.
And a thankless one, usually.
And a thankless one. And make no mistake, being a mom is a job. And for any woman who chooses that and says, that's what I want to do, then that's great. God love you. That's fantastic. I got no problem. But I have a problem with someone in the public eye, a Super Bowl champion. And here's the rub. Years ago, people decided to cancel Colin Kaepernick, one of the stars quarterbacks with the San Francisco 49ers, because he took a knee during the Star-Spangled Banner. Now, whether you agree with that or not, I just don't think it's a reason to cancel a person. And yet here we have a two-time Super Bowl champion, the Chiefs kicker, Harrison Butker, attacking all kinds of folks directly. And the NFL thus far, I have not seen it in the last couple of hours, thus far the NFL has said nothing.
Well, because if they attack him for it, then, oh, my free speech, all the MAGA people will freak out.
Well, and again, you have the right to say whatever you want, pretty much. I mean, you can't yell fire in a theater, but I'm just saying if you have political views and you're an individual and you want to go somewhere and say this, then yes. Do you have the ability to say that? Sure, absolutely.
There are still consequences for your actions.
But there are consequences for your actions in your professional world. And the NFL has gone out of its way to have, you know, LGBTQ days where their uniforms have some semblance of rainbow colors on it to stand in solidarity with the LGBTQ community. There have been, you know, women being promoted finally into position coaches and trainers and that sort of thing. And for a person who, and we should ask this to Brady Ewing, who comes on the show every other Friday, a former NFL player himself, I'd be interested to know, when you're in the NFL, does the league specifically, you know, say that in your role as a player, you can't do such and such and such and such? So maybe the out for this guy is, oh, I was there as a private citizen, but you're still representing the league. You're still under contract in the NFL. And I would think, again, this guy, Harrison Butker, has a right to say what his opinion as a private citizen, but you would think that the NFL or the Chiefs organization would say, well, Mr. Butker can certainly say his private views. We, the NFL, we, the Kansas City Chiefs, rebuke those comments.
Yeah,
that's what surprises me.
And I, again, free speech is a right. There are consequences, and I can say that if I was there for that speech, I would have been very angry, and I'm not sure if I would have left. I know I would have shouted some obscenities.
You would have shouted obscenities to the guy?
Oh, yeah. I would have told him to go screw himself and all kinds of stuff and try to encourage people around me to do the same.
Again, to me, it just is that the Kansas City Chiefs nor the NFL have said anything thus far, which I'm disappointed in that. I just don't think it improves the discourse here. But anyway, what's going to improve the discourse is having our friend Keegan Kelly here. He's going to join us on the other side as we turn the page, make things a bit lighter, looking at comedy podcasts and late night television. It's the All Balls Show for a Wednesday. We're listening. You're listening. We're here on the Civic Media Radio Network. The Todd Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 34 minutes past the hour of 1 o'clock. It is Wednesday, May 15th, 2024. Mr. Zahmer is dialing up a little video, Kill the Radio Star. The first song on MTV. I'm old enough to remember that. The first video played on MVT. And so a lot of people say video kind of killed radio. Well, here we are in 2024 still doing radio. So that wasn't quite true, but that's what they were predicting back in the day. Well, our podcasts going to threaten late night television. Brand new story. You can find it at cracked.com. A great article entitled "Comedy Podcasts Have Made Late Night Shows Obsolete." With the announcement of his new podcast, Daily Show host Jon Stewart demonstrates that he knows which way the winds are blowing. It is written by the great Keegan Kelly at crack.com. I want to read just a couple of lines here from Keegan's article and then bring him on. It says, quote, back in Johnny Carson's heyday, every network besides NBC went to great lengths in search of a superstar comedian who could match the energy and entertainment value of the Tonight Show host. Today, every comedian with a microphone and Squarespace sponsorship thinks that they are Johnny Carson. Last week, Comedy Central announced that they finally convinced Jon Stewart to take on a larger workload after a successful first couple of months in his part-time job back behind the anchor desk of The Daily Show. Stewart will still only host the network's flagship late-night show once a week, but beginning in June, the greatest Daily Show host in history will also start putting out regular episodes of his new podcast called The Weekly Show with Jon Stewart. Stewart said in the announcement, quote, after much reflection, meditation, and prayer, I have decided to extend my work week to 2 days. All hail Comedy Central, unquote. The author now of this great article at crack.com, Mr. Keegan Kelly, joins us live via the old StreamYard. Keegan, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming back on. Great work here once again.
Thanks for having me back, Todd.
It's great. I know you're a student of late night television. You're somebody who doesn't just watch it. You've studied it. I think you're a professional in it, in the genre. What's the overall view of this article? Because you don't make any bones about it in the headlines, as comedy podcasts have made late night obsolete. What has drawn you to this conclusion?
That's a bit of a catchy title there.
I clicked on it.
and that's why I wrote it. It really gets people in the door. But really the idea behind it and what inspired me was this news about Jon Stewart starting his own podcast is there's two simultaneous trends occurring within the comedy industry. The first is that the importance of late night shows like The Tonight Show, The Late Show, The Daily Show, it's really diminished within the comedy world within the last decade and even going a little bit further back. It used to be that, you know, that was really the highest rung on the ladder. Mm-hmm. And that was an important part of the comedy ecosystem is people getting their starts, you know, doing sets on places like Johnny Carson or David Letterman on their shows. And in recent years, that's really not been the marker of a successful comedian. And stand-up comedians who, while they're touring and doing their local shows, want to get a quick extra buck, what they're really doing is starting their own podcasts. So they're really taking holds of the democratization of these content tools on the internet and starting their own talk shows. Mm-hmm. These are more informal and obviously lower production value than the traditional late night shows, which obviously still exist on the old networks. But these podcasts are getting so popular and they're making these comedians so much money that at the top level of this podcasting ecosystem, these figures such as Joe Rogan, Mark Maron, they're really comparable in terms of pull, in terms of the guests they get on, to the late night hosts of old with these podcasts. So the power has really shifted from the traditional methods of comedy talk shows to this new internet age where it's people with microphones in their home studios hosting A-listers, hosting Robert De Niro, hosting whoever's coming by on their press tour to be this, you know, the new Johnny Carson.
I just find this fascinating. Again, someone who's, you know, been a fan of television and media, but in particular late night. I mean, I'm old enough to have watched Johnny Carson, you know, back in the heyday. I'm 54. And so I remember those original Tonight Show. You're right. I mean, people might forget that Letterman, Jay Leno, Robin Williams, go on. Those people got their start, their big break by doing their, what was it, 2-3-4 minute set on Carson's Tonight Show. And correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the big tells that you were good enough or Johnny thought you were going to make it is if he invited you over to the couch and sit down and actually have a chat with him. If you didn't get invited to sit down, it was like, oh God, I messed up.
That's right. Yeah. And that really was, you know, there was a very rigid structure within the stand-up world where, yeah, your Tonight Show spot was really, that was the first big stepping stone. And that just doesn't, that's not really how the comedy world operates nowadays. It's not seen like going on to, you know, for instance, Stephen Colbert's show and doing a set. That's not really what comedians are angling for.
Yeah.
Now they really want to own their own brand, own their own show, own their own identity. And the way they're doing it is they're starting podcasts. They're starting their own talk shows.
And until I read this article, I'm talking to you, I guess it didn't really hit me, but I go back and forth between Colbert and Jimmy Kimmel. I'm trying to remember the last stand-up I saw on Colbert. I can't think of anybody. I mean, are comedians just not doing this at all, or is it just very rarely?
It's very rarely. It used to be with the demise of like when Conan retired from late night. Mm-hmm. That, in my opinion, was really the last time that stand-ups had a goal on these networks. That getting on Conan and being seen by his audience mm-hmm. was the real carrot for a lot of these comedians in the mid-level who are trying to make that jump up to the point where, you know, they have HBO specials, where they have Netflix specials. And nowadays, there just really isn't one of those shows still on the air where comedians see that as a big career move to try to get on, for instance, Kimmel or Colbert or Fallon. And they're really, they're just moving to this podcasting sphere. And honestly, now getting on Joe Rogan's show, getting on Mark Maron's show, that is the big get.
Wow. It blows my mind as someone of a certain generation who I guess just holds these late night shows still affectionately. I guess as somebody who doesn't, people know I don't like change all that much. And so, excuse me, is part of it. And by the way, we're talking to Keegan Kelly from Cracked.com, who has this great article right now on Cracked.com called "Comedy Podcasts Have Made Late Night Shows Obsolete," with the announcement that Jon Stewart is going to have a weekly podcast in addition to his weekly anchoring of one of the daily shows on Comedy Central. But Keegan, is a couple of questions. First of all, was this movement towards podcasting, was part of it about the dollar sign, just the fact that anybody wanted to host a show, if you're doing it as your own podcast, you're cutting out the network, you're cutting out the age, or not maybe the agents, but it just appears more direct. Is part of this just money? It makes more money for the host?
Absolutely. And especially for these kind of mid-level comedians that I keep talking about, having that steady stream of podcast subscribers, of podcast sponsors, if they're lucky enough to have premium podcasts, to have that tier of regular income is really important for people who are trying to get their careers off the ground, get some stability while they're touring. Because it is, I mean, it's always going to be a volatile industry. So having that steady paycheck. And part of it is you don't need to be a Jay Leno or a David Letterman to have access to that stability, to those dollar signs. It's not just for the top dogs anymore. It's for anyone who can build a bit of a following off of their personality, similarly to the way the late night hosts used to. If you think you can really pull in that crowd, it's a no-brainer to start your own podcast and get that steady stream coming in.
So tell people that aren't familiar, and I'm not 100% familiar, you know, in the old days, whether it was Letterman or Leno or Carson or whomever, you know, you got your money because you got a big quote-unquote network contract. Your network said, we'll pay you X millions of dollars to be exclusively and do a late-night show on our network. But to my knowledge, the host didn't see any money from the sponsorships. Are these podcasts now, are they more equivalent to the current college scene with name, image, and likeness, where companies are paying directly to the host because they get a certain number of viewers or listeners? Or how does one make money on a comedy podcast?
Sponsorships is a big one. I made a joke about Squarespace in that article. They're very present in the podcasting sphere. There are companies that really, they've determined that their customers love podcasts, so as saturated as they can be in that market. I said also premium subscriptions. Some of these podcasters, once they have that little following, will be like, oh, if you want to hear an extra show every week, pay $5 a month. You'll be in the next tier of listeners. So it's between that. In terms of like where the middlemen lie on all that, like who are the new networks, there are these companies like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio is a big one. They'll take on the production costs of these podcasts, you know, the production costs that there are.
Right.
And, you know, do the administrative work. And I can't speak to exactly how those deals are worked out, but that is one avenue for comedians. But a lot of these comedians do it all on their own. They're their own producers, and all of the money that comes in goes straight to their pockets.
And that's your point. I mean, you think of the network shows. I mean, to have the studio space, the camera people, the production people, the set design, the lighting, getting a studio audio. I mean, that's a lot more expensive to produce one episode or a week of episodes of a live network late night show than it is to probably do a month or maybe a year of a podcast.
Absolutely. And you got it right. I mean, really, all you need is a microphone.
Preferably a good one. But yeah.
Preferably, yeah. You know, an audio engineer doesn't hurt. But yeah, that is a big part of you know, why this is so popular among comedians is the barriers to entry are very low. You really just need...
And I'm sorry to get, but do these take off because there's no FCC regulation that people can use sultry language or tell more salacious stories? Is it they take off because there's no filter in today's world, or is it because listeners, viewers feel more of a direct connection to the host?
I think it's both of those things that you just said. It's definitely that a lot of these podcasts lean into kind of the vulgarity, the crudeness that you're allowed to do on the internet as opposed to on NBC at 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. Also, the informality and the kind of lower production value does play into the personality aspect of it. A lot of these listeners, they're drawn not just to the jokes, but kind of the feeling that they're in this conversation with their favorite comedian. So both of those things play into the allure.
Well, anybody who tunes into our show knows that we try to look for a lower production value. Just Todd alone. I mean, if it wasn't for Zombers, we'd have no values at all. You understand? I'm see right there. There you go. No, I mean, but honest to God, this is one of the reasons I love this job and I love Civic Media, because what I long for on these late night shows on broadcast are actually, I mean, they used to be called talk shows. Because, I mean, remember, people forget the Tonight Show is 90 minutes. And Carson would sit there and actually have a conversation. And now what you have are 90-second or at the most maybe 3 or 4 minute segments before you go to commercial, and the questions are all written out by producers, and the host by and large just sits there. There's no conversation going on anymore, Keegan.
Absolutely. And that is a big part of why, you know, when celebrity guests come on these podcasts, people want to see him with the visage down.
Right.
And Fallon can't do that, but Joe Rogan can.
Very, very interesting. I'm going to come back and talk with Keegan Kelly from Crack.com on late night television and podcasts and ask him the question, are late night shows making skits for podcasts? That and more. Keegan Kelly, the Almost Show, and Zombers, our standing producer, keeping us high grade. Welcome back to the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 10 before the hour of 2 o'clock. That's 10 minutes away from our friend and colleague, the award-winning Maggie Dawn Show, right here across the Civic Media airwaves and on the Civic Media app. It is Maggie Dawn every afternoon following our program from 2 until 4 right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Right now, we are once again joined by one of the great writers from Cracked.com, Keegan Kelly. Keegan, what's your official title? Is it staff writer? What is your actual writer title?
Staff writer, yeah.
Staff writer. All right, very good.
Full benefits, too.
Full benefit. That's even better. I mean, staff writer with full benefits is certainly better than a staff infection. But anyway, I'll be here all week, folks. This is why I don't have a national television show, you understand. I need good writers if I was going to do this. Talking to Keegan Kelly from Cracked.com. Great article right now at Cracked.com. You can find all of his great work as well as the rest of the great writers at Cracked.com. Talking about comedy podcasts, and have they made late night shows on broadcast and cable too obsolete? Question I have for you, Keegan, is it appears, as I said, I long for the days when a talk show was actually a talk show, and that's one of the great things I love about our show, the opportunity to do this show, is that Civic Media affords me 2 hours every day. And if we want to have whatever, a 15 minute, a half an hour conversation with somebody, as we have with you, we're allowed to do that. And I think that leads to more generic conversation and sussing out things that you wouldn't get if we had somebody pre-producing and asking you set up questions and getting patent answers. So my question to you is, now with these podcasts becoming as, if not more popular, the comedy podcasts, has that forced the broadcast shows like Colbert and Kimmel and Fallon to basically do sets that they can send out in podcast form to somehow try to compete with this more online presence?
I don't know if the shows themselves are trying to compete with the podcasts. I think they're pretty set in their structure as it is right now. But as we talked about earlier, you know, the podcast hosts are very aware mm-hmm. of this trend. The late night hosts are aware of the podcast trend. Jon Stewart has his new podcast. During the writer's strike last summer, the Stephen Colbert, Seth Meyers, Jimmy Kimmel all got together and started a podcast. These industry people, they know the allure of the more informal, the less structured, and the more personal podcast. And they are leaning into that in their side projects. But I haven't really seen so much of that from the networks themselves, from NBC, from ABC, CBS. They're pretty set in the status quo. And a big part of that is, the Tonight Show, the Late Show, they serve a very utilitarian function for these networks where ABC needs to promote ABC shows, ABC talent, and they use Jimmy Kimmel to do it. Same with CBS, same mm-hmm. with NBC. So it's a little bit of vertical integration here that's kind of keeping the shows as is and keeping these interviews, as you said, very structured, rigid, on topic, and really designed by a marketing team to get these stars, you know, in front of eyeballs so that they'll come back and watch whichever CBS show is on right now.
You're 100% right, and that's one of the things I loved about Letterman in particular. Maybe Carson a little less so, but Letterman, he would just kind of sometimes, and also Craig Ferguson, quite frankly, would ignore the pre-asked questions and just say, here's what I actually want to talk about. And sometimes the stars and the celebrities would be caught a little bit off guard, but it made for great entertaining television, and you'd actually learn something.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, Craig Ferguson to me was such a hero of mine mm-hmm. for that. You know, he had this, and we've talked about this before, how he ripped up the note cards yeah. at the beginning of an interview to show these celebrities, like, we're not doing your publicist's interview, we're doing my interview.
Right. And I love that about him. And it yeah. seems like, you know, the guy that came after him, James Corden, he was maybe the last person, in my opinion, you know, to agree or disagree. It seems to me they did do certain bits, carpool karaoke and other things that were very transferable to a podcast or online presence.
Absolutely. And he really signaled a shift to this kind of internet-focused version of late night that's mm-hmm. starting to become more popular. You know, you can see it a lot on Jimmy Fallon's show as well. He'll do that. And people do love to see celebrities kind of out of their element, with their guards down, singing in a car, playing, you know, Jenga, musical Jenga. Right. I don't know what Fallon does.
I don't watch him that much, to be honest.
Yeah, not my favorite. But there definitely is that side of late night now where they're very aware of what the internet wants.
Right.
But they're not completely able to give that personal experience that podcasts now have and the Lettermans and, others had back in the day.
And we have a couple of minutes here, but give me your thoughts on this. What do you make of this new late night CBS show After Midnight? Honest to God, I've watched it several times. I can't figure out whether it's a game show. It's certainly not a talk show. It seems like to me, low dollars in, low product out. But what are your thoughts?
I'm not sure they entirely know what it's going to be yet either. it's based on a show at midnight that ran until I'm not sure the mid 2010s, but it's really trying to bridge the gap between kind of internet comedy, internet humor, internet style content, and the traditional late night formula. And I think Taylor Tomlinson is one of the greatest working comedians. She's an absolute pro. She works very hard at her craft. And I really do hope that her and her producers kind of figure out how that show works around her talents. Mm-hmm. Because right now, I'd agree, it hasn't really found the right footing, and really, you know, what it's trying to say about this medium.
One of our viewers there, Tony on YouTube, says, "I love Taylor, but I hate the show." I mean, and I haven't really been exposed to Taylor's work before. She's coming. She's going to be like below us here in the Comedy Store. And I'd love to have her on, but I don't really want to, because I would be disingenuous to say, oh, I watched the show. It's fantastic. Because I can't make heads or tails of it. Sometimes you have a celebrity. Sometimes it appears to be just an average person. I don't know what they're doing, but maybe it's me. Keegan Kelly, we always know what you're doing at crack.com. Great work. We appreciate you. Thank you so very much for being on the show.
Thank you, Todd.
Always a pleasure. Also, thanks to Pat Kreitlow and Trigvi Olson, Mr. Zommers, as always, for doing great work. And to each of you for listening, whatever you believe in, whatever you're fighting for, do not give up. Keep banging on your drums. Speaking of Craig Ferguson, stay tuned next. The great Maggie Dawn is next.